Beautiful, beautiful music. We apologize for the confusion on the words. We've got our A-team in back here. We know we're doing a good job when the evil spirits fight us. You guys are fighting a good fight. Stay at it back there. I have to confess to you, though, few things I enjoy more on Sunday morning than watching Daniel have to scramble and think on his feet. What you can't see, he can, is I'm down here laughing while he's having to scramble. So anyway, let's open our Bibles this morning to the Gospel of John. Spend some time looking here at the eyewitness account of what happened on Sunday morning. John was part of it. So follow along with me, beginning here in John chapter 20. First day of the week, Sunday, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb early while it was still dark. She saw that the stone had been removed from the tomb. So she ran to Simon Peter and to the other disciple, the one whom Jesus loved. And by the way, that's John himself, the one Jesus loved. And said to them, "They've taken the Lord out of the tomb. We don't know where they've put him." At that, Peter and the other disciple, John, went out heading for the tomb. The two were running together, but the other disciple outran Peter and got to the tomb first. Now, that would only be important information to the other disciple who outran Peter. He just wants to make sure we understand he was faster. He was faster than Peter. We've got that. Verse number 5. Stooping down, this is John, he saw the linen clothes lying there, yet he did not go in. Then following him, Simon Peter came also. He entered the tomb and saw the linen cloths lying there. The wrapping that had been on his head was not lying with the linen cloths, but was folded up in a separate place by itself. The other disciple, who'd reached the tomb first, then entered the tomb, saw and believed that Jesus was gone. For they still did not understand scriptures that he must rise from the dead. Then the disciples went back home again. But Mary stood outside facing the tomb, crying. As she was crying, she stooped to look into the tomb. She saw two angels in white sitting there, one at the head, one at the feet, where Jesus' body had been lying. They said to her, "Woman, why are you crying?" "Because they've taken away my Lord," she told them, "and I don't know where they've put him." Having said this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, though she didn't know it was Jesus. "Woman," Jesus said to her, "why are you crying? Who is it you're looking for?" "Supposing he was the gardener," she replied, "Sir, if you've moved him, tell me where you've put him and I'll take him away." Jesus said, "Mary." Turning around, she said to him in Hebrew, "Rabboni," which means teacher, "don't cling to me." Jesus told her, I think with a smile on his face, "don't cling to me, for I have not ascended to the Father, but go to my brothers and tell them that I'm ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and to your God." So much personal insight there. It's a delight to read that account. We're going to entitle the message this morning, "Dawning of a New Reality." When Jesus came back from the dead, he opened the door for us into a whole new, exciting reality. A reality, by the way, that coexists with this one. A reality that exists alongside our reality. Tim Klein serves as a missionary in Senegal, West Africa. He tells how one day he saw a group of people running and running fast, and he assumed that they were running away from something, but then he realized they were running to something, the dump. they were running to the town dump. Big trash truck had just emptied a load there, and they were running to the town dump, competing with each other and competing with the dogs to see if they could find some food or clothing or other valuable items there at the dump that they could salvage. In their world, in their situation, this was how they lived. They ran to the dump for the living. Now, compare that, if you will, to the site right out of here east of our building yesterday on this great greenway out here of hundreds and hundreds of little kids, well-fed, well-clothed, well-loved, well-supplied, well-dressed, running and squealing, but they were running to pick up Easter eggs, plastic Easter eggs, filled with treats. You know, it's hard to imagine, isn't it, that those two situations exist on the same planet. Isn't that amazing? One group running to the dump to try to find something that they could eat. Another group running to find plastic Easter eggs filled with goodies. It's hard to imagine those exist on the same planet, but they do. It's hard to imagine that there are two realities that exist in the same planet also, but they do. They exist side by side. These two realities we're going to address this morning exist side by side. And what Jesus has done here is he's pulled aside the veil and allowed us to look at this other reality for just a little while. And that's what we're going to do. That's what we're going to do. This other reality, of course, is much more wonderful than ours. Most of our minds are too consumed with our daily existence, I think, to give much thought to this other reality. But we're going to pause here this morning. That's what Jesus did when he came back from the dead. He opened the door for us into a whole new and exciting reality. Now, the first thing I want us to notice is the unveiling of a new world. Jesus pulls back this curtain and allows us to see the spiritual world. A new world with exciting, different definitions. A world of resurrections and new bodies and angels and things to which we're not normally exposed. Let's quickly address some misunderstandings concerning the spiritual world. The spiritual world is not a gray and ghostly place filled with see-through people and see-through angels. It has physical attributes, just like our world. In fact, the spiritual world shares many of the same beautiful physical characteristics with which we're familiar here. And it occurs to me now as I'm speaking to you, when I say spiritual world, that very term carries with it connotations that are not realistic. Let me show you what I mean. Mary, here, still in our physical world, just like we are this morning, while Jesus and the angels are in this other reality we're calling the spiritual world. They're existing in this other reality. And yet Mary can physically see Jesus. She can physically see the angels. She can physically hear Jesus and the angels. She can talk with Jesus and the angels. We know that angels have physical mass. They have weight because they're sitting down when she comes in and sees them. And after Jesus gave his permission, everyone was able to touch him and feel him in his new body. We call it a spiritual body, but it had physical attributes. Now keep in mind, our world was once a part of that world. Our world was once a part of the spiritual world. The two worlds only became separated when Adam and Eve introduced sin into this world. And for the first time, sin, which we should consider as an infection, a virus, if you will, entered this world, infected the entire world with sin. Sin has brought about great famine. It's brought about great destruction. It's brought about great pain. Things here have dramatically worsened. Now our world is quarantined away from the spiritual world. We still share many of the same physical characteristics, but you see how this works? Because of sin, the spiritual world has to separate themselves from us. God's world has to, when we were at one time, one has to separate himself from us because we're carrying with us this painful, nasty, vulgar virus. Until Jesus unveiled it to us afresh and anew, we really had not much understanding of it. My brother Phil was a missionary in Tanzania for 15 years, and just before he and my sister-in-law Phyllis came home, they adopted two little African nationals, Mary and Reggie. Reggie's real name is Fathy, but he goes by Reggie because he likes that name better than Fathy. Anyway, brought them back. Now, before they brought them back, these kids had only lived in a grass hut, slept on a very thin mat on the floor, had one change of clothes, and ate very poorly. But Phil and Phyllis tell how when they first brought Mary and Reggie back home, one of the first things they had to do in order to replenish their supplies was go to a super Walmart. And they describe how Reggie and Mary, I think at the time 4 and 6, isn't that about right? 4 and 6 years old. They walked into the super Walmart and they were just blown away. Try to put yourself in their shoes. All they had known was the most meager and desolate circumstances. But now they walk into a super Walmart and the shelves are packed all the way to the ceiling with all kinds of wonderful, wonderful, colorful, happy, joyful, stomach-filling things. You know, how can you explain that to some child in Africa? You can't. It has to be seen. Both realities have to be seen. Well, the spiritual world has some similarities with our world, but so much more. And when Jesus resurrected, he kind of pulled back the veil and allowed us to just catch a glimpse here. That's what we're trying to do this morning, catch a glimpse of that other world that coexists next to ours. So Jesus pulled back the veil to a whole new world. And this morning we want to embrace what's being said about it and get excited about this beautiful new world. Another thing I want us to notice is the unveiling of a new king. Hard for us to imagine how confusing all of this must have been to Jesus' followers. You know, they'd been with Jesus the man. They'd been with Jesus a good shepherd. They'd been with Jesus a wise leader. They'd been with him for 3 years. They'd seen a lot. Some of these, his mother, had been with him for 33 years. She'd seen a lot. But none of them had seen anything other than just Jesus, the man. In fact, they've just seen him die. Now suddenly, here's Jesus alive again after being dead for 3 days. That's dramatic enough all by itself. But in verse 17, Jesus says he's now ascending to the Father. One translation says he's returning to the Father. What is that all about? The disciples must be thinking. Jesus must have said something like, some of you have known me for 3 years, some of you have known me for 33 years, but for eternity, before you knew me, I existed, and God the Father knew me. God the Father knew me way before any of you all were introduced to me. So Jesus was always King of the world. But now, because of his resurrection, he was finally unveiling it to the world. Some follow him as king. Some don't. Some don't. Dr. Cyril Jode is regarded as one of the world's greatest philosophers. For years, he was the head of the philosophy department at the University of London. Militant in his antagonism against Christianity, hated it. Dr. Jode wrote many books which have made a great impact on the atheistic thinking of the world. But the Los Angeles Times carried a picture of the old scholar and a statement that shocked the world. He said he had once scoffed at the idea of sin, but he had come to believe that sin was a reality and that the only solution for sin was found in the cross and resurrection of Jesus Christ. So before his death, Dr. Jode became a zealous follower of Jesus. How do you explain that? A life dedicated to atheism, and toward the end, embracing the cross as an escape from sin. Here's another one. Lew Wallace, famous literary genius, was insulted by the myth of Christianity. He was determined to write a book that would forever destroy any hope in Christianity. For 2 years, he studied in the leading libraries in Europe and America, seeking information that would help him destroy Christianity. This has happened so many times. While writing the second chapter of his book, he determined that the evidence was overwhelmingly conclusive that Jesus was, in fact, the Son of God. He fell to his knees and cried out, "Jesus, you are my Lord and my God." Wallace became an avid follower of Jesus and later wrote the novel Ben-Hur, the greatest novel ever written concerning the times of Christ. All of this started in the hearts and the minds of men who were geniuses, who set out not to defend Christianity, but to destroy Christianity. When Jesus was resurrected, he unveiled the reality that he had always been king of the world. Some recognize it and follow him as king, lord, master, boss. Others don't. One final thing. The unveiling of a new you. When Jesus was resurrected, he opened the door to a new reality of you. Verse 31 says, "These things were written so that you may believe Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and by believing, you may have life in His name." Let's ask a couple of questions here. First, what does it mean to have life? I mean, every one of us here this morning are breathing. You wouldn't be here otherwise. Every one of us here this morning, our hearts are pumping. Our blood is flowing. So whatever this is talking about, it must be something different than just ordinary physical life. It must be something greater than what all other living men experience. And the second question is, what exactly does it mean to believe? You see that in verse 31? By believing, you may have this new kind of life in His name. One more testimony here. Jim Turnbull, prominent attorney, writes, and I quote, "We had the world by the tail," talking about himself and his wife, "we had the world by the tail. My career as a trial lawyer was developing and I was getting good cases. My wife and I had met in the university, making good income. We were able to buy a home within 9 months of being married. I worked long and hard hours and my cases were becoming more prestigious. But as my caseload increased and our income grew, there was also a nagging feeling of never being satisfied with what I had. Then out of the blue, my wife became a Christian. Unfortunately, we started growing apart because I told her I didn't need that crutch. My friends invited us to attend church with them one Sunday. Joan and I went together. I was so impressed that we went back the next week. As I continued going to church, I realized I hadn't examined the evidence concerning Jesus Christ as the Son of God. So for 2 years, I looked at the evidence and came to the conclusion that even I could convince a jury beyond a reasonable doubt that Christ was exactly who he said he was. That's when I quietly prayed and asked Jesus to come into my life. Now I have a tremendous peace, and God has given me a great sense of purpose for my life. The change, listen to this, the change that has taken place in me since then is undebatable. You know, and we hear that testimony time and time and time again. Lee Strobel had a movie made about him. Pulitzer Prize winning writer, same thing. Examine the evidence. Skeptic, atheist, examined the evidence, gave his life to Christ. You see, this is the potential for any of us here today. I start out as the old me. I start out as the limited me. I start out as the me that's confined by this world. And then I begin to see glimmers of light coming through the veil, the curtain. And as I investigate, as I examine the evidence, Jesus pulls back the veil through his Holy Spirit, and it's like, oh my, that is real. Jesus is real. Jesus really did come back from the dead. Jesus really does offer me eternal life. Jesus really does want the best for me. I cannot deny Jesus any longer because the evidence is far too overwhelming. I'm not going to follow the culture. I'm not going to follow all those who have led me astray for so long. I followed them long enough. I have a defeated life. I'm not happy by following their counsel and their direction. So I am going to turn from that, and I'm going to turn to and trust and follow Jesus. And there is going to be, from this day forward, a new me, not because of my determination, not because I've made up my mind that's the way it's going to be, but because when I turn to and trust Jesus, his Spirit moves into me and transforms my life. We think this morning about Easter, the Lord's resurrection, almost in an academic way. We've been exposed to it superficially in so many different ways. It's time today to recognize Jesus was coming to unveil and pull back the curtain and reveal to us a new you, a transformed, stronger, victorious you. This is the beauty of Easter. This is why you're here this morning. It just may be. Maybe not, but it just may be that this morning you're saying to yourself, I'm going to do it. I'm going to sell out to Jesus. I'm going to throw my hope toward him. Like so many others, I'm going to trust him. I'm going to follow him. I'm going to live for him, and I'm just going to believe that he's going to give me a new life. It may be that you're here this morning and you're ready to do that. Good for you. Good for you. We're going to sing here in just a moment. While we're singing, step out from wherever you are. Come on down here to the front. I'll do all the talking. Pray with me.